Good morning and welcome to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, the Senate's Committee on the Economy. Today is April 10th and it is 9:05 in the morning. I'd like to welcome Senator Meyer. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome Senator Gardner. Good morning.
Good morning.
Vice Chair Senator Hughes is chairing an education committee and won't be joining us until that committee adjourns. So she passed on that message to us. And thanks to Carrie and Kyle, the recording secretary and LIO operator. Today we have three items on the agenda. We have a resolution that I've introduced, and then we have two House bills. And so we will begin by having my aide, Weston Eiler, share with us the background that led up to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10. And welcome, Weston, and the floor is yours.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Weston Eiler, staff to Senator Costello. Madam Chair, Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 10 would proclaim 2018 to be the year of innovation in Alaska. This is something the legislature has done from time to time to spotlight an issue or theme that is crucial to the state and that also highlights the work being done by the legislature and Alaskans statewide. Madam Chair, as members are a little bit familiar, and I'll just walk through for them and the public listening, innovation has been a constant theme that has been running through not only this committee's work during the last 3 years, but also the first session of the 30th Alaska Legislature. We're seeing it in a variety of forms, whether it be to grow Alaska's economy during our first recession since the 1980s, whether it's trying to find efficiencies or modernize government in challenging fiscal times, or if it's simply seeking to utilize technology to improve the quality of life facing Alaskans in areas such as healthcare, education, and a variety of other services. Innovation is a great tool and concept by which to approach these issues, Madam Chair. This committee, of course, is very familiar with much of the work and discussion that's been done on innovation. Beginning with the first week of session, this committee convened a panel of economists that talked about kind of changes in the economy, structural kind of macro problems that we're facing, and what can be done about it. Innovation not only comes in the form of private sector investment or in using technology or kind of new ideas or startups. Alaskans are innovators by necessity, Madam Chair. There's a pioneering spirit in our state that really requires innovation, requires adaptation. That goes back not only to the founders that helped build and advance our state, but also in public policy. We see it in the form of the Alaska Permanent Fund or innovative management systems such as IFQs or CDQs that seek to use new ideas, new thoughts and concepts to better improve how we manage Alaska's resources and how we advance our state. The pioneering history of Alaska, of course, is well known, whether it be those that built the Trans-Alaska Pipeline or early railroads and mining infrastructure that still stands to this day. Madam Chair, as members are familiar too, this committee has really taken a hold of the innovation issue by engaging local and statewide stakeholders on this topic. Annually, the Juneau Economic Development Corporation holds an innovation summit here in Juneau. During the past 3 years, we've had those speakers come to the committee. They be in the form of Harvard Business Professor Kristen Kettles, who briefed the committee about the concept of economic clusters and planning and the need for a strategy. Mr. Michael Schumann, who highlighted some of the benefits that can happen from legislation this committee worked on, such as crowdfunding and finding really small solutions to help startups and Alaskans begin and invest in private businesses. Or most recently, Madam Chair, earlier this session, with the presence of Speaker Robert Tucker, who talked almost squarely about innovation, the theme being that innovation is everybody's job. That it's something that can't really be delegated, that it needs to be kind of a constant management imperative for any sort of organization that goes through. One of the suggestions, Madam Chair, that Mr. Tucker made during his presentation was declaring a year of innovation, such as this resolution proposes to do. This puts the issue spot forward, but also allows for a variety of synergies with the issues that the legislature and statewide stakeholders are facing. As for some historical context, Madam Chair, the legislature has done this recently In the 29th Alaska legislature, the legislature passed House Concurrent Resolution 5, which declared actually several years, 2015 to 2017, the years of the Arctic. Prior to that, the 26th Alaska legislature in 2009, declared 2009 to be the year of the Army non-commissioned officer. And the 24th Alaska legislature declared 2005 to be Rotary International Year. So this is done from time to time to kind of recognize an issue that's brought forward, something that's facing our state. Innovation, I think, has also shown, Madam Chair, to be a common thread that is running through a lot of the issues that we have this year, whether it be technology, education, or just kind of the need to adapt and find solutions and efficiencies as our state faces challenges. We've heard in committee not just from management consultants and economists, but also about some of the innovation that's already happening now. The University of Alaska gave a very good presentation that talks about the sort of patents and research that their faculty and students are doing. We're seeing it with young Alaskans who come here and present Lego robotics and kind of new mechanisms that they're building and the creativity that goes along with it. So, Madam Chair, as the committee is very familiar, innovation, the creativity, and the multiple concepts and themes that come under it is a very prescient topic. This resolution, again, seeks to proclaim 2018 to be the year of innovation in Alaska, to help advance that sort of out-of-the-box thinking and ensuring Alaska constructs a culture where innovation and entrepreneurship is accepted and encouraged. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Weston, and we will be setting this resolution aside today. I did want to mention to members, however, that I would like you to read it and pay special attention to page 1, line 16, moving on to page 2, lines 1, 2, and 3, and if you have suggestions for how that might be changed or any additions to that, I would love that input, and if you could get back to us, you know, by the end of the day today. But I just wanted to have a chance to let Weston introduce it. And as he mentioned, this is a specific suggestion that came from the main speaker of the Juneau Economic Development Corporation's Innovation Summit, Robert Tucker. And what happens when you name a year, such as, you know, we're trying to do here, it actually spurs conversations, and organizations can take advantage of it in different ways. I actually spoke to the Commissioner of Education about his excitement about naming the year of innovation. So just glad we had a chance to introduce it to the committee. And again, if you have any edits or changes to that one paragraph or any others, please let us know. So, Senator Gardner?
Could you just repeat the line numbers that you're particularly?
It's the last line on the first page, and it moves over into the first three lines on page 2.
Thank you.
That graph. We attempt to name different, sectors of our history and past and future, and so I don't want to leave anybody out. I just want to make sure that, you know, I look at it and I think, well, perhaps we should mention indigenous populations, perhaps, with a nod towards that. So thank you very much. Thank you, Weston. And next we will be hearing House Bill 81. Representative Christ Tompkins, welcome, and feel free to come forward with your staff or anyone else that you'd be interested in bringing up. This is the bill's first hearing, and in this committee we usually hear a bill the first time, and we always hold it to let members look at it and see if there's any questions. So that's what we'll be doing. We'll take public testimony today on it, and I just want to give you a chance to share your bill with the committee.
Thank you very much, Chair Costello. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, representative, rural Southeast Alaska, sometimes known as the Iceworm District, although maybe not so much recently. House Bill 81 is basically energy efficiency legislation and seeks to create more value with an existing asset that was enshrined into law by Senator Hoffman, I believe, in 2010 and created the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund, which, unlike other revolving loan funds, isn't actually a pot of money sitting in the bank right now, but is a bond-authorized loan fund that is administered by AHFC. House Bill 81 sort of recognizes that the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund has been underused in recent years. There has been, actually just recently, a loan that was taken out by the city of Galena, but it's a $250 million bond-authorized revolving loan fund, and I believe that loan to the city of Galena was in the neighborhood of $2 million. So we're looking at less than one one-hundredth of utilization. And in light of that fact, and in light of the fact that the more energy efficiency, the better in Alaska, the more that money can stay in Alaska, that we don't sort of send joules and calories and our dollars into the atmosphere through energy inefficient buildings, the better. House Bill 81 broadens eligibility for accessing the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund to a suite of nonprofit entities, from American Legion halls to 501c3s to chambers of commerce, so that they can make energy efficiency improvements in their structures and physical plants and spend more money of their funds focused on their core mission and delivering core services to communities than paying energy costs. So that's House Bill 81, and it passed out of the House by a 35-1 vote, and we're excited to continue the conversation in your body and in your committee, Madam Chair, and both myself and Ms. Wilbur, who's much more familiar on all the details than myself, are at your disposal for any questions that we might be helpful for.
Thank you very much, and please feel free to walk us through a sectional if you have one.
Yes, gladly. Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Barrett Wilbur, staff to Rep. Christ Tompkins, and I'm happy to walk through a sectional for the bill. Section 1 requests that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation include a report of activities under the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund in their annual report each year. Section 2 adds federally recognized tribes, regional housing authorities, and nonprofits to the list of entities that can be offered loans through the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund. Section 3 is a conforming change to existing law, which adds tribes to the current loan enforcement terms, so that under this section, tribes would join the list of entities which agree to waive a sovereign immunity defense, as such a defense could be applied to an energy efficiency loan. Section 4 adds tribes and nonprofits to the list of those authorized to borrow from the loan program. Section 5 is a conforming change, which adds the newly eligible entities to existing laws which lay out financial responsibility of loan recipients to the state of Alaska if they default on a loan. Section 6 includes definitions for the bill, including definitions for federally recognized tribes, regional housing authorities, and nonprofits. Under this bill, nonprofits that are designated as 501c3s, C4s, C6s, C12s, and C19s can apply for loans under the Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund. Section 7 adds a provision to the bill which requires the loan program to preference originally eligible entities, which are municipalities, schools, and state buildings, over the newly eligible entities, and also expressly forbids for-profit entities from receiving loans from the fund. So that's a full sectional. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Barrett. Appreciate the sectional. Could you point me to the language that includes, broadens it to include schools?
Senator Costello, the bill already allows schools to apply for energy loan funds, so we're not adding them to eligibility. They're currently eligible, and I believe that language is on page 2, line 17. You can see a regional educational attendance area is already within the bill, as well as subdivisions of a municipal government. And while neither of those explicitly refer to schools, I called legal and clarified to make sure that that was the case, and they signed off on it. So
great, thank you. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Meyer, and I also want to mention Stacey Schubert is online. She's with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, if you have questions for her.
So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. I want to thank the sponsor as well. Sorry here. I think we're all sick. Okay, so you said that the schools are already included, but did you also say that only one entity for $2 million has taken advantage of this program?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, that's right. And the first loan taken out of the revolving loan fund was by the city of Galena, I believe, in December of 2016 of last year. So it's dramatically underused.
Okay, through the chair.
Senator Meyer?
And why do you think that's the case?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, that's a great question. And, I mean, I can sort of share a personal anecdote. When I first came to the legislature in 2013, especially representing an area with extremely high energy costs, some communities with 60 or 70 cent kilowatt hour electricity, not to mention sort of heating costs, I was excited to learn that the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund existed. And there are a lot of small but discrete communities in my district, and so I ended up systematically reaching out to every city administrator and superintendent in my district, which is many dozens of people, to say, you know, hey, have you heard about this program? I mean, this is for you. It, you know, should be helpful to the community. And it seems pretty likely that there are energy efficiency improvements that would have a really great payback period. And despite my sort of vigor and enthusiasm, generally that sort of outreach was, some people said yes, some people said no, but there wasn't any real interest. And in my sort of diagnosis of why that was, at least at the time, is that everyone was so sort of used to looking for grants, basically, or capital projects through the legislative budget process, that from their perspective, which I think is reasonable to some extent, you know, why would you borrow money when you have at least a decent chance, and up until that time there was a history and track record of that, of getting free money. So I think that might be changing now, as people sort of look to be more self-sufficient, realizing that we're in a more austere time and there aren't the resources we once had. But that's sort of my anecdotal but not, I think, completely unfounded assessment of why it's been so underused.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I can continue.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Again, Representative Christ-Hopkins, thank you for bringing this forward. It seems like the last time we had a significant capital budget, though, was like 2013. So it's been a few years. I'm surprised more people haven't taken advantage of this. And do you see this program as perhaps competing with banks? Do banks make a similar loan to private sector banks?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, you're right. And I think the fact that the first loan was taken out just that recently, as in December of last year, speaks to the fact that perhaps entities are realizing that this sort of new, more austere fiscal environment is likely here to stay. And that, you know, if they've got energy leaky buildings and they want to do something about it, there isn't going to be free money coming their way, probably, at least for the medium future. Who knows? I mean, some bonanza might come in 5 or 10 or 15 years. So I think there's likely to be increased interest. But again, I mean, even if looking at sort of less than 1/100th of the utilization of the revolving loan fund, even with increased interest, there's sort of huge room for increased participation. To your other question about banks, effectively, the answer to that question is no, in that these financing arrangements are highly unique. And the way the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund works is you have to have your structure audited by an energy auditor to identify specific energy efficiency improvements and how much energy and therefore how much money those improvements will save you. And then the way you pay back the loan is the savings that you finance, that you pay for up front, end up being your loan payment. And because of this sort of unique and sort of technical nature of the financing, which AHFC has sort of experience with, there's not really sort of an analog or a comparison in the private sector, at least so far as we're aware of.
Okay. And
Senator Meyer?
Madam Chair, if I may continue, one more question. Do we have any idea how many nonprofits and tribes that might apply for this? $250 million is a lot of money, but if everybody would apply, I don't know if we have the capacity. Obviously, not too many have taken advantage of it thus far, but I just was wondering if you received any input on groups that are interested in this.
Senator Meyer, through the chair, that's a good question, and I've thought about it a bit myself, and of course it's all going to inherently be speculation, but I can maybe speak to a few sort of facts that might sort of inform what would happen were this passed into law. The first thing I might bring the committee's attention to is there's been a partnership in Fairbanks between, I'm going to get an entity or two wrong, but I believe the Denali Commission, Foraker Group, Cold Climate Housing Research Center, and perhaps a few other partners looking at energy efficiency improvements in the nonprofit sector. And there have been a few buildings that were retrofitted and energy improvements invested in. That sort of pilot program in Fairbanks was designed to look at sort of the payback and the sort of sort of cost benefit of making these kinds of improvements in the nonprofit sector. And I know those entities are very interested in sort of scaling this in the future, and have been sort of involved with the process of drafting the bill and testifying for the bill. So, those institutions, and I regard the Foraker Group with a lot of sort of esteem as sort of a bastion of best practices in the nonprofit sector. I know they're sort of motivated to get the word out and to try to get this to nonprofits. But I think maybe a more direct answer to your question is a lot of the nonprofits in Alaska, their budgets are so small compared to, say, a school district or a municipality, maybe in the tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. And what I would kind of suspect is, even if there's a lot of interest, it would sort of be like a bunch of sort of mosquitoes feeding on the Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund and looking at sort of financing that's maybe in the magnitude of $20,000 or $50,000, because their buildings are so much smaller than, say, a middle school or a high school, and their budgets are so much smaller. But even for a soup kitchen or a chamber of commerce or a tribe in Kwikluk or somewhere really off the grid, $50,000 energy efficiency improvement proportional to them is going to make a big difference, actually. So again, it's speculation. I hope some of those thoughts are helpful or speak mm-hmm. to your question.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And Madam Chair, you asked part of my question, which was about schools. And I also wanted to know, does this apply to all nonprofits? Does it apply to churches or organizations like the Girl Scouts or something like that?
Schools, yeah.
Senator Gardner, through the chair, the bill doesn't apply to all nonprofits. It applies to a specific subsection of nonprofits. So there are different nonprofit designations mm-hmm. By the IRS, I think, is the one that designates them. So this bill specifically would open eligibility to 501c3s, which is kind of classic nonprofits. So that includes, for instance, churches, religious, educational, charitable, literary, and scientific groups, as well as 501c4s, which is like Lions and Rotary clubs. So it's civic leagues and social welfare organizations. 501c6s, which tends to be business leagues or chamber of commerce's, kind of industry umbrella organizations like the Alaska Pharmacists Association or the Alaska Truckers Association, as well as 501c12s, which are mutuals and cooperative nonprofit associations like telephone and electric cooperatives, and 501c19s, which are post or organizations of that have to do with past or present members of the armed forces, so VFWs or American Foreign Legions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we also have online Stacy Schubert. Welcome, Stacy. I was hoping you could answer the question about the one that was posed by Senator Meyer in terms of why has this fund not been utilized more? And, you know, as we're looking at reducing budgets, I mean, really the last place that we've sort of held off is, you know, our schools, and we're trying to address, you know, why the costs are rising. We know that healthcare is one, but also energy costs, and I'm curious why schools haven't, or more individuals haven't taken advantage of the fund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Stacy Schubert, and I'm the Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I think what the sponsor said was correct in terms of the history of the program going back to 2010, when the legislature enabled us to go to the market and bond up to $250 million for this program. Schools and other public facilities didn't necessarily have to come to AHFC for a loan at that time when there was grant money that was available to them. As things have changed, there has been more interest in the program, and in fact, we worked with Department of Transportation on some projects that they had identified for public facilities, and they were able to find cheaper funds from another source. And so we do see that happening occasionally, but we are participating with Alaska Municipal League and others to make sure that they're aware of this program.
Okay. Thank you, Stacy. Any questions, Senator Gardner, for Stacy?
No.
No, okay. Next, I'd like to open public testimony for the bill. And we have Chris Rose, who's the Executive Director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. Welcome, Chris. If you'd like to introduce yourself to the committee and provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of REAP, Renewable Energy Alaska Project. We are a statewide nonprofit education and advocacy group that has been for the last 13 years focused on promoting renewable energy and energy efficiency. We're a coalition of more than 80 organizations, including electric utilities, independent power producers, developers, installers, NGOs, local governments. And we support the bill. We have supported House Bill 81 for some time. We see the ability for those nonprofits and for tribes to take advantage of this loan program as a huge opportunity. We estimate that the state of Alaska, us Alaskans collectively are spending about $5 billion a year on energy every year. And that's heat, transportation, electricity. Even if you just cut out the transportation, clearly Alaskans are spending a lot of money on energy, and conservatively we could probably be saving about 20% of that and keeping it out of our economy. That's $1 billion. That's a big goal, I think, for Alaskans to try to figure out different innovative ways to save money through energy efficiency. And the nonprofits and the tribes around the state often are located in buildings that are not that energy efficient. We don't have a great energy efficient building stock here in the state. So the way that the AHFC is willing to put these loans together and structure them is the kind of structure I think that tribes and nonprofits could take advantage of. And so we hope that the committee will consider this bill and move it forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chris. Questions? Is there anyone here in Juneau that wishes to testify on Senate or House Bill 81? Okay, seeing none. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay, with that, we'll close public testimony on House Bill 81, and we'll set this aside to give members a chance to look it over and if they have any further questions. And thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next, we will have House Bill 157. This was introduced by the House Labor and Commerce Committee. And Representative Keto, if you'd like to come forward with Ms. Carpinetti and introduce your bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair, member of the committee. Thank you for the invitation and for hearing House Bill 157. House Bill 157 provides some changes to the Alaska Life, Health, and Guarantee Association. Basically, the big change is that there is one provider of services and policies in Alaska that, because of the definition of the type of organization they are not pulled in when there is a failure of an insurance company, and they are not assessed to help assist with payment of claims for that failure. So this bill modifies that to reflect that this organization, while it is not exactly an insurance company like others, does provide those services and should be contributing to the Guarantee Association. We do have members or individuals from the department that have significantly more detail on the bill. We consider this bill more of a cleanup and a bill that can make the Guarantee Association more effective and functional for our state.
Thank you very much, Representative Keto. Lori Winghire, I see you're online or here in the room. If she'd like to testify on it.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I am online.
Good morning,
and
Lori.
I'd be happy to give you you and the committee an overview of the bill, a sectional analysis.
I think an overview would be sufficient.
Thank you. The Guarantee Association, there are two in the state. There is one formed for property and casualty, and there is one formed for life and health. And as Representative Keto said, when an insurance company becomes insolvent, then one of the associations, depending on the line of insurance, steps in and through assessment back to the member insurers, which does go back in most cases to the policy holders, and they are capped in this case to 2% on this particular bill. We cannot assess more than 2%. These assessments are collected, then they are used to pay the claims that have been presented to the insurer that has gone insolvent. It is, as you know, insurance is a contract between insurer and consumers or your constituents, but on occasion we do have insurers, the last one being a rather large long-term care insurer that went insolvent nationwide, and there were about 36 consumers in the state of Alaska that by that insurer becoming insolvent would not have had their claims paid. The total claims was about $2 million, and that happened probably about 3 weeks ago. The association sent out assessment letters to collect the money. They will hold the money, and as the claims are presented, the claims will be paid. It has happened to workers' compensation insurers in the past. It has happened to property insurers. We don't like to see it happen. We monitor closely the financials of insurance companies to do our best to ward it off, but on occasion it does happen, and these two associations are the protections that stop the consumers from not having any recourse from which to collect the claims that they may have presented to the insurance company prior to the insolvency or until they can arrange new insurance. This bill amends and does two things. The last time the bill or the act itself was updated was in 2000. So we are updating it to the NAIC model law. And as Representative Keto said, the other thing we are doing is bringing in hospital medical service corporations as member insurers. Most of the changes are technical in nature. Some of them are there's a couple typos that needed to be corrected within the act. Happy to walk through the sectional if that's what the committee would like, but that in essence is what the Guarantee Association function is within the state of Alaska. And the two things that we are trying to do is the address Hospital Medical Service Corporations as member insurers and update the act to conform with the current NEIC model.
Thank you, Lori. Are there any questions of committee members? Senator Gardner.
Thank you. It seems to me the obvious question is, what do the Hospital Medical Service Corporation insurers think of this? Do we know? I imagine they'll tell us.
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, I believe that you will find that there is one online to testify. There is only one in the state of Alaska, Carrera, and I believe they will tell you that they are not totally opposed to the bill, but they would like to see there is another model law coming out in the future to address long-term care insurers and how the Guarantee Association, the Guarantee Associations nationwide, would address the long-term care insurers. Long-term care insurers are a problem nationwide. They struggle. We know that Penn Treaty has become insolvent. There is another one that is selling to a presumably to avoid insolvency. The claims are huge. They have long tails on them because of the nature of the product. And the NEIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, is working on a bill that, if I could just back up for a minute, when it's a long-term care insurance company, medical insurance, and in this case in the state of Alaska and 20 other states, medical insurance and hospital service corporations, pay those claims. That's the companies that are assessed. The bill that is being worked on would bring in life insurance companies too. And I believe that they have a concern, as others do, that they all want to see life insurance companies brought in to address long-term care. I'm not going to speak for them, but that is been a concern for all long-term care products, that the hospital, that the health care insurers by themselves cannot address long-term care industry or these policies alone sufficiently. But I'll let, I believe Primera is on the line, and I'll let them speak to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we've been joined by Vice Chair Senator Hughes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to open it up for a public testimony, and we have Sheila Tallman online calling in from Seattle with Primera Blue Cross.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Costello and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sheila Tolman with Primera Blue Cross, and I'm here today to just offer some brief comments on House Bill 157 for your consideration. We recognize that instability of the insurance markets is something that, you know, is occurring in healthcare and in long-term care, and the associated solvency concerns that may result from market instability. The NEIC, which is the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, is meeting at their spring session today and over the last weekend, and they have been discussing since earlier this year, and because of some of these issues with long-term care insurance, and making updates to their life and health guarantee association model, as this is considered the changing marketplace for life, health, and long-term care policies, and make changes associated with that to address any insolvency. So Primera is working with the other Blue plans in other states and the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association to provide comments at a broader level so that new approaches can increase competition and not negatively impact costs to consumers. Some of the changes in House Bill 157 would negatively impact Primera customers with an assessment and increased rates if there is an insolvency. So, and there has been, there's work that's already going on right now with the NEIC, and we urge your consideration, which we understand is due later this year, but understand that, you know, schedules change. But we think that that's important that work be considered before making any changes to Alaska's Guarantee Association that may not be consistent with the model. There may be other ways of tackling insolvency issues, especially in a state with limited competition in certain health insurance markets. Typically, also, when some of the policies that are at the crux of this issue are typically not offered by health insurance companies. So the new administration at NBC is very open to new ideas that offer long-term solutions to market stability and increased competition, and we urge time explore any new ideas there, too. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sheila. Are there questions of committee members? And I also wanted to mention that we've been joined by Senator Stevens. Senator Gardner?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Tallman, for testifying. Do you have any sense of what the timeline is for the new models through NAIC?
I know that I'm part of a working group that is submitting comments to the NAIC, and we hope to have those recommendations in by June of this year so that NAIC can take them up. The schedule that I have heard, and certainly the director will know more, is that the intent was to have something ready by the end of this year.
Thank you.
Hey, is there anyone else online or here in Juneau who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay, seeing none, we do have two individuals who are online for questions only. I wanted to mention that to the committee. We have David Pfeiffer with the Division of Insurance, and then also Donald Thomas with the Alaska Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. Are there any questions for either of these individuals? Senator Gardner?
Thank you. I'd just be interested to know if either of you think it's of value to wait until then or to move forward now.
Donald, why don't you take a first stab at that question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this bill is based on a model act and addresses changes that were made back in 2009. I don't have any direct feel for the timeline here. In fact, I did not know until this hearing that this model act change was being considered. We, as the association, simply administer the law as stated in the act, and in terms of whether or not an entity like Premier would be made a member insurer is something that the association itself doesn't delve into. We simply, again, administer the law, and I don't really have a feel, again, for how long it might take before this model act change might take effect.
Thank you.
Okay. So if there's no one else online who wishes to testify, or here in Juneau, I'm going to close public testimony on the bill. And we will be setting it aside for further review. Appreciate you coming to the committee, and my staff will be in touch with your office about the next time the bill is up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. So that is basically the agenda for today's committee meeting, and our next committee meeting will be tomorrow at 9 a.m. Committee is adjourned.